time to bring the light.
Hi there, and welcome to Bring to Light, where we have honest conversations about faith and life. I'm John.
I'm Jude.
And today's episode we've called The Truth About Lies, where we're going to be exploring and exposing. We're going to be exploring reality and truth and exposing the opposite of that, lies and misconceptions. And Jade, you're forever misunderstanding and having misconceptions about things. In particular, you're forever mishearing things. Come on, tell us the one about the Lion King.
I think I know what you're getting at. I think, well, this was like a few years ago now, but I know exactly what you're thinking about. It's the time when we were like messing about a little bit, weren't we, like play fighting, I think, or something stupid like that. And I think I pinned you down.
Tried to pin me down, probably.
I pinned you down and I said, Penjigi. Yeah. And I remember you just looked at me like I was crazy. You were like
what is pen?
You were like, what?
What is Penjigi?
I rolled my eyes. I was like, you know, Penjigi. And you were like, what? I was like, you know, from The Lion King. And he was like, you just looked blank at me. And I was like, you know, when Simba and Nala, they're like play fighting, Nala pins him down, Simba down, and she goes, Penjigi.
And I said, it's not Penjigi, because Jay, that is not a word.
No. It's, I know it's not a word, but I've literally like.
Hang on, it's Pinge again. So she goes, she says it in accent, it's Pinge again, but she goes, Pinge again.
Well, when you actually said that to me, it all made sense, obviously. Yeah. Like, I realise now, like, duh, of course, she's pinning him down. She says Pinge again in like an American accent, Pinge which is really misleading, but it was to me because all I heard was Pinge again. And can I just say, it's not that crazy because. Lion King, I thought it was like Swahili for like, I thought it was a game. So, you know, like, you don't win, you can pin the person down, but you don't win until you get to say Penjigi. And if they manage to get up before you say Penjigi, then you've not won. A bit like WWE, when they have to tap the floor, don't they, like five times before it's like a win.
One, two, three.
Yeah, and if they get up before then you've not got them down. And Penjigi was the same. So like I've made this whole like narrative in my head about to justify Penjigi because it didn't make sense to me, so I made it make sense.
Sure. So Peter Kay does this whole thing as well about misheard song lyrics. So you're not on your own here. And in fact, one of the ones he touches on was one of the ones you thought as a kid in the Titanic.
Yeah.
So this is another time she's misheard stuff.
I always thought that when Celine Dion was singing, I thought she said that the hot dogs go on rather than the heart does go on.
And Peter Kay does stand up saying exactly the same thing. So you're not alone in that. You thought that when you were like a kid. And recently, about 10 years ago, he did stand up about that.
Yeah. And I just always thought, because I know it was weird. I did think at the time, like being 8 or whatever, I did think, oh, it's random that she's talking about hot dogs. But I watched like the Titanic a few times and they were going to New York. And what do they eat in New York?
Hot dogs. Hot dogs.
I thought it was like a saying, you know, don't worry, the hot dogs will go on. Like, as in like, you're going to die, but guess what? People will be eating hot dogs regardless of whether you live or die. Like, life goes on, you know?
That's so funny. Like, as if that's
makes
like,
sense
as if
me.
That's, as if like, it's like, Jack, and he's like falling to the bottom of the ocean, and she's like, don't worry, I'll have a hard time. He's gonna be like, great, I can die a happy man.
I thought it was an American saying. There's loads of weird
I just love that there'd have been some massive ballad by Celine where the chorus is hot dog.
Well, it's just that French Canadian accent. It just threw me on that word. And I'm not the only one, like you said, Peter Kay like agreed with me.
It's true. So. And it does sound like that. If you listen to the song, you can hear that.
Have you ever, like, because I feel like I've misheard loads in my life, but like, have you ever misheard anything?
So definitely, so in the movie Grease, there's a character we never get to see that the lads all reference called Annette. Because we never see her in the film, I never realised they were saying Annette. So all we know about Annette is that she's got big boobs. That's all we know. Yeah. And she must be somebody like the guys like. Maybe she's pretty as well. Maybe they just like her big boobs. We don't really know that. But like, she's referenced twice and I never knew what they were saying. So there's one bit where Danny's talking about Sandy to all the guys. I think it's the singing the song at the start. And all the lads, one of the lads turns to him and goes, are her jugs bigger than Annette's? And I never, I'm, I never heard that because I was like, my brain couldn't even comprehend Annette because she's not in the film. So
and it's
I thought,
not a common name either.
No, exactly. Yeah. So I thought he was saying, are her jugs bigger than her neck? Like, as in her neck.
And so, some kind of measurement.
Yeah, well, I was like, how do you even compare boob size with neck size? Like, I don't even understand that. She's then mentioned later on again where Rizzo's singing about Elvis, and she's like, Elvis,
yes,
Elvis.
Sandra Dee.
Yeah, singing Sandra Dee. She's like, Elvis, Elvis, let me be. Keep that pelvis far from me. And then says something like, as to Elvis, as if, like, and just says to him, like, would you pull that crap with Annette?
Yeah.
As in, like, Annette must be this attractive girl, and you wouldn't do that with Annette, so why are you treating me like that?
Yeah.
Again, who the hell is Annette? So I thought it said, would you pull that crab with a net? As in, like, catch a crab in a net. Like, and again, yeah. I thought it was like a phrase, like, plenty more fish in the sea. Like, would you pull that crab with a net?
Like, so that's just exactly the same as my whole hot dog thing.
Yeah, well, and I guess what we're getting at is when you mishear things, you make them make sense.
Yeah, you make them plausible.
Yeah, exactly. And I wonder if that's true with our misconceptions in life as well. When we think about exposing lies, like, no one intentionally believes a lie.
No.
It doesn't make any sense. Like, nobody, like, everything we believe, we think. That's why sometimes people have said to me, oh, don't think it's arrogant to think that the Christian faith is true and to think you know what truth is.
Mm.
But we all think that.
Yeah.
Look, we all believe that what we believe is true. No, otherwise we wouldn't hold that belief. Mm-hmm. The second I think, hang on, something about what I believe isn't true here, I change my belief so that then what I believe is true. So we're going to look at that a little bit as we go on, because I think there's real power in that. Because, for instance, with the hot dogs go on, or with catching a crab in a net, or with Penjagee, we thought we had reality, but we didn't. We'd misunderstood, and we'd built our reality on a misconception. Light bulb. So in his interview with David Letterman, Barack Obama said this great quote that I love. He said, one of the biggest challenges we have to our democracy is the degree to which we do not share a common baseline of facts. One of the biggest challenges we have to our democracy is the degree to which we do not share a common baseline of facts. And I think that's true not just of our democracy, but just society in general. Mm. Like, one of the biggest challenges to society is the degree to which we just don't share a common baseline of facts. And you can see this all over the place. Obviously, that's probably referencing Trump and fake news, but I think we just see it all the time.
Yeah, I mean, even with the whole, you know, vaccine debate at the moment about whether you should get vaccinated or not, I mean, I think people are really split about it. From, like, people I know, I've got educated people on both sides with totally different opinions on it. I've got some people who are very much like, no, everyone should be vaccinated. It shouldn't really be a choice.
It's our only way out of this.
Get it done and move on, almost. And then you've got other people who are anti-vaxxers who are like, no, we don't know. You know, are there any long-term effects? Yeah. Is there anything dangerous about this? I mean, and then there's the far-fetched claims as well, which is kind of another step from that, which is the whole, don't get this vaccine because...
It changes your DNA.
Yeah, it's going to change your DNA. You're not going to be human anymore, or it's going to make you sterile and things. And so we're getting so much information online particularly. And I think people feel like there's almost too much information and too many different opinions that it can be really hard to know what is actually true and what's not true and what's just opinion. And, you know, because at the end of the day, there are facts and then we're all interpreting those facts differently. And so that, I guess, back to your Barack Obama quote, like, we're not all sharing that common baseline
of truth
because we're
still trying to work out exactly what is true.
Yeah.
We asked our Instagram account at Bring to Light Podcast. We asked everybody, do you think you're good at spotting a liar?
Mm.
And also then we changed the question slightly to, do you find it easy to spot a liar? And secondly, do you find it easy to tell the difference between truth and lies in society, culture, the media?
Mm.
And it's interesting. So, do you find it easy to spot a liar? 73% of people said yes, which I'm really surprised by.
Mm.
Because all I can think with this, so I get it. So I think it depends how you answer the question. I want to challenge this a little bit. And maybe you're listening to this and you said yes on our Instagram, or maybe you're just thinking, no, I do though, and you didn't answer on Insta. But I think the reality with this is because we have all been successful at spotting a liar, yeah. It's almost a confirmation bias. Yeah. As in, we think, oh, I'm like, even with people in the media, even, I don't know, Jimmy Savile or Rolf Harris or people who have like done awful things. I know so many people who never accused Jimmy Savile in his lifetime ever in it, like, or whatever, but then there were like family members that you would have known if they like, I hate that guy, I think he's a paedophile or whatever. Mm. They never said anything like that, but the second it came out, they were like, I knew there was something weird about him.
Yeah.
And then they use that as a confirmation bias of like, I spotted him, I knew he was dodgy. And or even just in our lives, we do recognize, I think we all find it easy to spot a bad liar. I think that's the reality. Yeah. But the good liars, like...
But we're still believing their lies, so we don't actually know we've been lied to.
Exactly. Yeah. So do you find it easy to spot a lie? Well, you can actually only really successfully... And maybe I've stitched people up with that question, but probably you can only definitely be sure if that's the case if you were then presented with every person who's ever lied to you and then weigh up how many of those lies you spotted and how many you didn't. Mm. And people were a bit less confident, though, when I asked, do you find it easy to tell the difference between truth and lies in society, culture, or the media? That was almost 50-50. Only 54% said yes, and obviously then 46% said no. And that kind of backs up, I guess, what we're talking about with the vaccination and things. I wonder, like, not at all thinking too highly of ourselves here, that necessarily people would really take would really put any credence in what we'd have to say. But I wonder now, if you really love this podcast and love us, and suddenly we said we were massively anti-vax and we'd read some things, would that change your opinion based on the fact that you've loved the other 10 episodes? Maybe it would, maybe it wouldn't. But I think the reality is we're all swayed by people we look up to, or people we respect, or people we know even, and what their opinions are. And so I think, like, whether we find it easy to spot lies in culture, I don't know. Like, you hear all sorts of things. I hear things from politicians all the time that make me so angry. And then you speak to someone else who's maybe a bit more politically astute, who goes, ah, but what you're not remembering in there is this. And I go, oh yeah, gosh, okay, maybe I've judged people too soon. Mm. And so I think it's quite hard to spot a liar.
And I think people kind of equate intelligence with the ability to be able to spot a liar, or spot lies.
So if you haven't spotted one, you feel stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And actually, that's not the truth at all, I think, because I think, you know, actually, it's making me think of a documentary I watched the other week.
Classic documentary.
Another documentary. Actually, I couldn't recommend this enough. I watched it on Sky Documentaries, and it's called The Vow. And it's an 8-part documentary series, and it's just basically about this cult that emerged from called Nexium, which was kind of evolved from a like self-help teaching program.
Yeah,
or it was kind of like at least presented that way.
Yeah.
And there was a darker side to it. And I remember it being in the news a few years ago, and I remember the shocking allegations coming out that this, like, it's in America, and there's this guy called Keith Raniere. And I think he had an extremely high IQ. I mean, he's up there as a very intelligent guy. But
often they do.
Yeah.
Like cult leaders.
And this guy, he devised this like program, this self-help, this way to live your life, which would equal success.
Mm.
And there was a lot of stuff in it that was really interesting that I thought, yeah, actually, it's a really good point. And oh, yeah. And you could see that it made sense. And actually, you could see the wisdom in actually a lot of the teaching. But it kind of came out that had been a front, and actually they'd been grooming women, and there'd been a whole human trafficking side to this whole like thing. And it was a really interesting documentary because it really showed you the psychology behind basically being deceived, because these people who had joined the cult initially, they weren't just like some like naive teenagers. You know, like when you think of like cults, I think of like Manson back in the 60s, these hippie teenagers who don't know much and get sucked into it away from mummy and daddy. Like it's really not like that. These were successful 20s, 30s, something grown-ups who were intelligent.
Had families,
were intelligent, often. You know, had their lives established, but they felt like they were missing something.
Mm.
And they'd just gone along and, you know, really enjoyed the initial wisdom that was being dispensed to them. But then
once they put their trust in that, in this Keith Raniere, it was a very slow fade to him having control over them. It wasn't just a punch you in the face, like, you know.
It wasn't an instant thing.
No.
He didn't say, join this group because I've got a few good ideas, and then bam, you're selling young women or something, or you're whatever.
Yeah, and I guess the point I want to bring out about it was, like, there was this one woman who she'd met her partner through it. They just had a baby. She'd done very well. She'd been an actress, but she'd done very well in the organization that she'd, in fact, kind of become one of the teachers in it. And it just took one night for her to end up, and this sounds absolutely crazy, but she ended up actually being branded on the crotch. No other way to say it. With this guy's initials. And
she thought it was a different design initially,
She didn't realise it was this guy's initials. They basically convinced her that this was a sorority, it was just for the women, and this was like a mark that they would all know that they had, and it was like supposed to be empowering. Sounds crazy.
But it's that tribe mentality, I guess, a little bit, isn't it? It's that feeling of belonging somewhere, being dedicated to something, being committed.
Yeah.
And therefore you kind of think, these are my sisters or these are my friends. We're all in this together. Yeah. And therefore there's strength and power in that.
Yeah. And so she ended up having this done, but immediately after went home, and almost like it kind of like broke the spell over her, because she obviously had to go home to her husband. You're not going to be able to hide that from your husband.
Yeah.
She had to say, like, I don't know how I've gotten into this position, but I need to show you something, and had to show him the brand. And you can actually, it's online now. It's not inappropriate where it is, but it's in that region. And you can look it up online, because it is shocking. But it was kind of the whole, like, this intelligent woman and stuff. And it took that for her and her husband to realise, this is dodgy, this is dangerous. This guy has a lot of power, and we've just assumed we could trust him because it had been a slow fade. Obviously, it wasn't day one, right, I'm going to brand you in the crotch. It was, that happened after years and years of building a relationship and that trust being built.
Yeah.
And so I think we have to be careful, because I think we're all, under the right circumstances, we are all vulnerable to being deceived.
Yeah.
And I think that's what shocked me about this documentary, because it really helped me understand, like, whoa, actually, could I be that kind of person to end up, like, obviously it's far-fetched, but in a cult doing crazy things? And actually, watching this, it made me realise, gosh, like, it's not as simple as you think it is. That's what it's making me think of now, you know, the whole, like, I think we all have to almost be on guard, because we can't assume that we're above being deceived, because I think you're more likely to be then.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm gonna mess with the order a little bit, Jay, because what you've just said there just reminds me so much of we heard some great teaching from John Mark Comer on this, and he speaks about the importance of spirit and truth. So the spirit of God is like God's power and presence. So it's his presence and his power is in that presence. And the truth of God, and the truth in general, is just reality.
Yeah.
So it's this idea that you can be best transformed by spirit and truth, or if you phrase that a different way, presence and meaning. Or if you phrase that another way, relationship and reality. And you need both.
Yeah.
And so what you're saying there reminds me a little bit of some of what he was saying, where Keith Raniere has this relationship with them. It goes really deep.
Yeah.
And he does that slowly, and he builds that trust over time.
And he isolates them from their family and friends who are outside of that organisation.
Yeah, and I'll come on to that, definitely. But he has that, he builds that trust and that credibility. And trust and credibility can only come from presence, really, and stuff. You have to know somebody.
You have to spend a lot of time with them.
Definitely. It comes from intimacy, really.
Yeah.
And you can't have intimacy without being present with somebody. So he builds that presence, that spirit, that relationship. But that alone is only half of it. We need spirit and truth. We need relationship and reality. So just having the spirit or the relationship or the presence isn't enough. And that can be really dangerous when you then have an absence of truth. So then you fill them with lies.
Yeah.
And he's built that that closeness, but then he's twisted away from truth. And I think it's you need both those things. You need presence and meaning and relationship and reality. And we believe that's the life that Jesus wants for us. He wants that spirit and truth in our lives. He wants us to be present in our life and to fill our lives with his truth. And therapists can help with this. If you've ever been alongside somebody, if you think about the people that have been the most beneficial to you in your life, if you've ever got therapy or counselling, I know I have, it's so powerful because that person is present with you and then they can speak truth over you and it can just change your life. It can just unlock something. Mm. I remember my counsellor just saying to me, I think you're struggling with a lack of forgiveness. And suddenly I was like, oh, wow. And I'd never thought of that really, because I didn't feel particularly angry. I just felt hurt and broken. And so I thought, like, maybe lack of forgiveness would be lived out through just real anger towards that person. But it wasn't. It was actually more apathy and more frustration. And so speaking that over us can really transform us. But it's also why your life can be ruined by bad therapists like Keith Raniere, who gain that trust and have that presence in your life. And then if they speak lies over you and make you more insecure than ever, and actually their presence is one-to-one, like you said, and they get you alone and they isolate you from everyone else who might be able to say, yeah, that's not true. Mm. And they say, you're this kind of person, aren't you? Have you ever worried that you're like this? Have you ever, that's how you get like abusive therapy or abusive husband or wife or whatever. It almost always comes from isolating people.
Yeah, and I think I think everyone can relate to the whole late at night having negative thoughts about yourself or your life, you know, when you're alone.
Yeah.
And you can just really kind of spiral down into like a really negative, view of everything. And something that you never have when you're around friends or family, like in the day kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, it's weird. It's like when you're on your own,
it's easier to believe crazy things or easier to believe.
View things in a negative way rather than seeing them for what they actually are.
I think every single person has had a sleepless night or struggled to sleep, sometimes just thinking about the next day and building up bigger than it needs to be. And in the daytime, you were fine because you could say, hey, mum, like, I'm really stressed about this exam. Can we chat about it?
Yeah. Give you perspective.
Or if you're a believer, can you pray for me or whatever? And they suddenly go, well, it's okay. It's not the end of the world. And they'll say, but you've nailed all the rest, or so far it's gone well. And they just speak a bit of truth and encouragement over you, and suddenly you feel okay about it.
Yeah.
But late at night, when you're on your own with your thoughts or in isolation, it can be particularly bad. Mm. And so what is so powerful and helpful life-changing with regards to spirit and truth or relationship and reality is so damaging when you flip that and have to experience the opposite, because the opposite is isolation and lies.
Yeah.
And we weren't created for those things. Mm. Every single one of us doesn't think that lying is good.
Mm.
Every single one of us doesn't think that being alone is good. And I don't mean that romantically. I just mean loneliness. I just mean being disconnected.
It's like Tom Hanks in that film when he's on the island.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Crazy.
He has to change the volleyball.
He makes Wilson friend out of football or whatever it was.
Exactly. And so we need that. And I think isolation and lies lead to anger and pain and death. I think it's why we were so angry when Boris cancelled Christmas last minute. Because one, we were already isolated. And we were craving relationship, and we were thinking, oh, we've got those 4 days or whatever was promised over Christmas. At least we can see our family then. But then he moved it all again, changed it all again. So he brought more isolation, but also lies. Because 36 hours before then, he'd said Christmas wouldn't be cancelled. Literally less than 2 days before then, he literally said it wouldn't be cancelled. And so we didn't buy him. We didn't buy it when he said things have changed. And I'm sorry, we all felt, or I certainly did, that he'd lied to us in that situation. And so I suppose what I'm getting at is, I think that human flourishing happens best when we have spirit and truth, when we have presence and meaning, when we have relationship and reality. But we absolutely nosedive and suffer and struggle when you have isolation and lies.
Mm.
Light bulb.
So we've been talking about how lies are so much easier to believe when you're isolated.
Mm.
And I think a good example of this would be to go back to the Bible and look in Genesis, and read the story that we find there in Genesis 3. Maybe, John, you could read that out for us, and then we can kind of go from there.
Yeah, sure. So the context leading up to this is the creation story, and God has made Adam and Eve and the garden and the world and everything in
it. It's like the origin story of the human race.
Like, why are we here? Mm. And the beauty of this story is not a science textbook necessarily. It teaches us loads of things. And one of the things, one of the biggest things it teaches us is our rebellion from God, and the first lie, really, the first lie that was told and the first lie that was believed that caused rebellion from God and caused us to fall away from this flourishing of presence and truth. So God's made everything and he's given the garden to Adam and Eve for them to be good stewards of it and to enjoy it. And he says to them, you can eat from any tree in the garden except one. The only tree you can't eat from is this tree because it possesses the knowledge of good and evil. And if you eat from it, you will die. And so Satan, in the form of a serpent, comes to them and he says to the woman, did God really say you mustn't eat from any tree in the garden?
Yeah, I mean, even, you know, straight away, we can see that he's casting doubt on what has God said to Eve. And also, I find interesting the fact that he doesn't just come right out and say a statement like, God didn't say that or whatever. Yeah. He's almost like, by asking a question, it's really sneaky.
Yeah.
Because it's like putting the seed in your mind. It's like, I'm just asking a question. I'm not actually saying anything about God. I'm just inquiring.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's making you doubt. It's making you doubt God's character in that moment for Eve. It's also making her doubt her memory of the situation.
Yeah.
Is that actually what God said? Did it really go down like that? And things like, and obviously straight away she knows, no, he didn't say that. He just said we couldn't eat from one tree. And that's what she goes on to say. The woman said to the serpent, we may eat fruit from the trees in the garden, but God didn't say you mustn't eat from the tree that's in the middle of the garden and you mustn't touch it or you'll die.
Mm.
Satan continues, you will certainly not die.
Mm.
The serpent said to the woman, for God knows that when you eat from it, your eyes will be opened and you'll be like God, knowing good and evil.
Yeah, and I mean, this is where he kind of, like, you know, tells his outright lie. He casts his alternative reality to Eve.
Yeah.
You know, God said this, but actually I'm saying this.
Yeah, that's great.
And which one do you want to believe?
Yeah, which one do you think is reality?
Yeah.
This is my truth.
Yes.
Like, and things like, and maybe this could be your truth as well.
Yeah.
Is God really for you?
Yeah.
Why is God holding back from you anyway? Why can't you eat from any tree?
Yeah.
Is all those kind of subtexts to it all.
Yeah.
That say, like, and anyway, even if you do eat from that tree, actually, do you know what? You can eat from any tree in the garden and you won't die.
And that's so sneaky as well, because yes, they don't die at that exact hour.
Yeah.
They don't die on that day, but now they will die.
Yeah,
and it's almost like
world.
A small print thing, you know, when you watch something on TV, like an advert, and they're not lying to you, but then there's like, this like...
Yeah. You do this, you'll get £100 subject to terms and conditions. And you think, oh, I get £100 if I spend £3,000 and I get it in 30
exactly.
years.
Exactly. And it's like you said earlier about it's the lie is dangerous because it's that 98% truth, but you're almost lying through omission of one very key thing, which is that you will die, just not maybe right now.
Great. And there's a brilliant quote again, John Mark Comer brings in, and I'm going to bring this in here before we continue with this story from Genesis. He says that the devil's strategy is deceitful ideas that play to disordered desires that are normalized in a sinful society. So he says the devil's strategy is deceitful ideas that play to disordered desires that are normalized in a sinful society. And that's what we see here. He comes in with this deceitful idea. And then the woman says, the next verse 6 then says, when the woman saw that the fruit of the tree was good for food and pleasing to the eye and also desirable for gaining wisdom, she took some and ate it. And so straight away, it's this deceitful idea that plays to her disordered desires.
Mm.
And if you think about it, that's so true when we lie. Mm. Like, for instance, Jade, if I came back... lies have to play to our disordered desires. If I let's say I came back with a hold all full of money,
mm-hmm.
like I had like 30 grand in it and stuff, and I was like, Jade, look what I've just found in a bin.
Yeah.
And I think God wants us to have this money, because why else would he let me find it?
Mm.
Like, that's a deceitful idea, because that's not our money.
Yeah.
And it might play to your disordered desires, because if we any of us who found 30 grand would love to keep it.
Oh yeah, definitely. I know, like, I definitely would struggle with that.
Yeah.
Because I like nice things, yeah. And I want to have a comfy life.
We're saving for a new home.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many reasons why.
Yeah.
I mean, like, particularly, I'd say at this
particularly
stage,
if, like, you literally just found it. Like, it's not like you actually robbed someone. It's not like you held someone up, like, with a knife and robbed them of their money. The fact that you just found it. Like, I think that I'd like to think I would hand it into the police, but I would struggle. I'd have the temptation.
Yeah, the deceitful idea is so let's say I really do find it in a bin and stuff. Well, the deceitful idea is, I deserve this money, or I'm allowed this money, because it isn't my money and things. Like, I haven't stolen it, and that's what plays to my disordered desires, that maybe God wanted me to have this money. But what really is probably the reality is I found it because hopefully God thought I was the kind of person that would hand it in.
Yeah.
You could equally play out that narrative and things. And so if we said that, if I said that to you, like, because disordered desires are then normalized in a sinful society. So if we then bounced it off our parents and were like, listen, look, we found this money, we don't know what to do with it. If your family and my family were both, and some of our friends were both like, hey, look, you guys are saving for a home. It does sound like God's blessed you with this money. That's become normalized in a sinful society where deep down we're all a bit greedy, let's be honest. And then you feel fine about doing it.
Yeah.
And then you end up going down like that. And then you've built your home even on a lie of like, we'll find us keepers, or I'm allowed to keep this and stuff.
You're not thinking of the people who maybe money it is.
Yeah, that could have been stolen
really
from someone else's home. As the police turned up to like arrest the guy, he dumped it in a bin and carried on running.
Yeah.
And no one else found it.
Yeah.
So it could be stolen money.
Yeah.
But you just want to keep it.
Yeah.
And that's one big question I would ask is, when you're thinking about is something true or not, or whether you think something is reality or not, is it reality or do you just want it to be reality? For instance, another example might be like your boyfriend's lied and cheated on you and been dreadful for you, but you're just convincing yourself he's the one. And things, it's like, is he though? Is he good for you? Or do you just want him to be good for you because you're terrified of being alone? And so I think that's a good question to ask. Is it reality, or do we just want it to be reality? And going back to Genesis here, it isn't reality. It isn't reality that it's fine to eat from that tree. That's the devil's twisted reality. It's that 98% truth of, okay, you won't surely die in this moment kind of thing. It's half truth, isn't it?
Yeah.
But they are now headed in the direction of death. Their relationship with God, which is what was sustaining them, and they wouldn't have died because the Bible says that sin, the wages of sin is death. Like, sin is what leads to death.
Yeah.
And at this point, there's been no sin, so there would be no death. And so this is the moment when the first sin comes in and screws us all over, to be honest.
Yeah. That was a very expensive piece of fruit.
Yeah, exactly.
Very costly.
That's right. And what is interesting as this story goes on is in verse 8, the man and wife, when they do this, they realise they're naked, they realise they're vulnerable. And this is fascinating, by the way, because depth of relation, the closer you are to somebody and the purer your relationship is, the more vulnerable you're happy to be.
Yeah.
So for instance, that's one of the reasons why, when we spoke about in the sex episode, we don't believe in sex before marriage, because we believe that until you have a close depth of relationship with someone, you shouldn't be vulnerable with them. It's the reason why now, like with a husband and wife, mostly, I'd say most marriages, happy to walk around naked and see each other naked.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't answer the door like that. Even if someone knocks on the door and you haven't got any clothes on, you quickly put some on, because, and the reason for that deep down really is we don't know if we can trust who's at the door.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know what their motives might be and things. We don't know if they might take a quick picture and put it online. We don't know if they would judge us or laugh at us or whatever and things. Whereas when you're married, you have that depth of intimacy and relationship whereby you can be completely vulnerable because you trust each other. The relationship hasn't broken down. And in this situation, the reason they hide is because the intimacy has been broken. The trust has gone. Suddenly the trust between them and each other and God and all those relationships that once were perfect and therefore able to be intimate and close, and it wasn't weird to be naked, suddenly it was weird to be naked, and it had broken down. And so they sow fig leaves and they try to hide themselves, and then God asks them what's happened. God confronts them. And he says, who told you you were naked? And have you eaten from the tree I commanded you not to eat from? It's interesting. two questions. I've just thought of this now, but the devil asked them a question in order to lead them away from God. But God's question is always to bring us back to him. I think that's really interesting. God says, who told you you were naked? Have you eaten from the tree I commanded you not to eat from? It's an opportunity for them to confess and own up to what they've done and come back to him.
Mm.
And so he asks the man that, have you eaten from the tree? And Adam doesn't say, yeah, I did. I'm so sorry. He goes, the woman you put here with me, she gave me some fruit from the tree and then I ate it. So straight away, it's kind of shifting the blame.
Yeah, not taking responsibility.
And then the Lord says to the woman, what is this that you've done? And she goes, well, the serpent deceived me. Like, it's everyone shifting and stuff. Yeah. It's like everyone, if you've seen that Spider-Man meme where everyone's pointing at a different Spider-Man, that's what you've got here. Everyone's like blaming everyone else.
Mm.
And how often do we do this even today? How often when we're caught and confronted with the reality of our sin, do we go, it's not my fault because and things we love to do this even now. So this is where Christians believe lies come from. Ultimately, we believe that we're fighting against a few things. We're fighting against our own sinful flesh. When this happened, when Adam and Eve ate from the tree, Christians call this idea the fall. Like, it's our fall from our relationship with God, or our fall from grace.
Yeah,
exactly. And so we now have a sinful flesh about us. Like, we often, it's why. It is why some of that truth about that story is they could eat from any tree, but they were desperate for the one to eat from the one that they shouldn't have eaten from. It's like if your mum says you can eat anything in the fridge, but don't touch the chocolate cake because that's for people coming over on Sunday. That's the thing you want most in the world. Like, we seem to have this natural inbuilt rebellion within us.
It's that strive for independence,
yeah.
But independence from God, which makes no sense because he's like the life giver and the life source of everything.
Yeah,
so that's what it is. It's that wanting that independence.
And we want that autonomy. So the Bible says that that's one of our struggles, but equally one of the other struggles is the devil. There's a good force in the world, which is God, who longs for human flourishing and longs for us to live in perfect relationship with him, with one another, with creation and with ourselves. But we've got this desire to want to do things our way. And the flip side of this is this bad force in the world that whispers these deceitful ideas to our disordered desires. With the desire, and Satan's desire is to see them normalised. And that's why when you look at the world now, it's not as it should be. You only have to turn on the news to see. It's just we're more separated and arguing more and hating the opposite side to us than ever before. And so I think Jesus gives us this idea of the devil, where he says that when he lies, he speaks his native tongue. So he's the father of lies. That's how Jesus describes the devil. He's not this red horned guy. The kind of this caricature, that he is a master of lies. And in fact, when we look at the biblical accounts of the devil, we see that he's less likely to come with deceit, disease or disability or discomfort, and more likely to come with deceit. It's not that he doesn't ever come with disease or disability or discomfort. It's just that he's more likely to come with deceit. And the reason for that is his number one goal is not to give you a hard life. His number one goal is to keep you away from Jesus. And so he might give you a hard life if that'll keep you from Jesus. But giving you a hard life in and of itself, he doesn't care. In fact, he doesn't mind if you have a great life as long as you don't know God. That's one of the big reasons why I remember when I became a Christian, I thought, how can some people be so successful and not be Christians? Like, if surely God blesses the ones he wants to bless, who know him and love him and honour him and serve him, and the other people who are just doing their own thing, how come they're so blessed? Well, they're blessed from earthly perspectives. You might have fortune and wealth and fame and success, but you can't take that stuff with you, and ultimately your life can still be left as just rubble and dust at the end of it if that's your goal. And so that's why people can have amazing lives and stuff, because the devil, it doesn't care if you've got a good life or a bad life. He cares whether or not you're close to Jesus. And so he'll use disease, disability, discomfort if that'll make you question God. But the best way to make you question God is just to lie to you. Light bulb.
Yeah, so obviously we've just talked about the devil, but we've also mentioned the flesh as well. And there's in Jeremiah, in the Bible, this book in the Bible, it says that the heart is deceitful above all things, and like, who can understand it?
Interesting.
And I think that's such like an interesting verse. It's in Jeremiah 17, verse 9, if you ever want to look it up. But I think that what that's saying is we're like the best liars to ourselves.
Yeah, great.
You know? And because we want to believe, it's the disordered desires. We want to believe some things to be true when they're not.
Yeah, great.
You don't even have your best interests at heart.
Yeah.
Like, great. You can't even trust yourself.
And what's great about that is, one, you don't know what is in your best interest.
Yeah.
Because you didn't create the world.
Yeah.
The person who created the world knows how it works best. You don't.
Yeah.
And secondly, even when sometimes you do, we still just lie to ourselves because we just want things we know aren't good for us.
Yeah.
The mantra of the world is be true to yourself and follow your heart.
Mm.
The mantra of the Bible is the heart is deceitful. Be careful doing that stuff.
Yeah.
And
guard your heart.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Guard your heart. Like, it's don't be open to every idea that's out there.
Yeah.
Test things.
Yeah.
You know, really read into things. Don't just assume that things are right just because they sound good.
Yeah.
Or they feel good or whatever. It's actually like, no, be on guard. Don't think, like we said before, like, don't think you're above being deceived.
Yeah. And verse 6 again, going back to that, when the woman saw that the fruit of the tree was good for food and pleasing to the eye and also desirable, she ate it. There was 99% of other trees out there that also had good food that was pleasing to the eye and also desirable and things. And so, but she just wanted to do, she followed her heart there.
Mm.
She didn't guard her heart. She didn't trust God over and above an alternative reality.
Mm.
And I think that's an essential thing for us to be thinking about when we say, is it reality or do we just want it to be reality? Well, who says what reality is? The person who created reality. Like, it's why it is dumb to doubt God has your best interests at heart or God has a good handle on reality. Because guess what? If God doesn't have a good handle on reality, no one does. Like, if the person who created reality doesn't really get it, then we're all screwed. The beauty of it is, of course, God does understand reality. And so we've kind of addressed where lies come from. But when Jade, something you touched on there is this idea of the flesh, which I guess is our own desires. It's our own sinful nature now. And the problem with living out of that place, and the problem with just, in fact, let me ask you, like, what is the problem with living out of that place? What is the problem with just living your truth? Because we hear this all the time.
Mm.
Like, this is my truth. And I'm entitled to live my truth. Like, what do you think about that? What's the problem with that?
Well, the first thing I'd say is the fact that I think it's, what do you mean by truth? Because I think when people are saying this is my truth, what they're really meaning is this is my experience.
Yeah, or my opinion.
Or my opinion.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's valid in and of itself. Like, everyone has a different experience of life.
Yeah.
And therefore, they have got that. They form perspectives and beliefs based on their experience, and that's a valid thing. But I think the problem with using truth is the fact that truth is not supposed to ever change. Like, truth
is not subjective.
It's not subjective. No. Not if you look up truth in the dictionary, it's not subjective.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is, with when people say my truth, that can change throughout your life.
Yeah.
Your truth, putting in quotation marks. It's, you know.
And it makes it sound indisputable as well, truth.
Yeah.
This is the truth.
That it can't be challenged.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas your truth can be. The truth sets you free. Your truth can ruin your life.
Mm.
Look at Eve. It was her truth that the tree looked good for eating and was great. And any reality you can think of, any time where you've convinced yourself this was a good path to take, and then in retrospect, you've gone, that was a stupid path to take. And we've all been there.
Mm.
And things. That's the problem with your truth, is that often it can enslave you. The Bible says the truth sets you free, but your truth can enslave you and ruin your life. And that doesn't mean, as Jade's already said, doesn't mean your opinion is invalid. It's just that your opinion isn't always reality. That's why we have to be humble. In fact, M. Scott Peck, in his book The Road Less Travelled, he defined mental health as the ongoing process of dedication to reality at all costs. So the ongoing process of dedication to reality at all costs. So your truth, living your truth, that isn't an ongoing dedication to reality at all costs. That's an ongoing dedication to your own reality at all costs. And the problem with that is, if mental health is about finding true reality, not just what you hope is reality or your own perceived reality, then you will have a negative and declining mental health if you're living your life out of the place of lies, out of a place of believing lies. So if you believe it's possible to be isolated and still be happy, to shut yourself off from the whole world and everyone in it and still be happy, and that's your truth, that will really, really hurt you, and your mental health will rapidly decline because of that. And we've seen that this year. If you think it's possible to steal from people and still be happy, all the things that we know aren't good for us. If you think it's possible to literally just live off KFC, as much as I would love to do that, if you think it's possible to do that and still have a healthy mind and body, you'll very quickly realise that's not true. You're basing your life around it's a fantasy to think you can live off KFC and have no negative consequences. And so the ongoing process of dedication to reality at all costs is what sees you having a healthy mentality. Living in fantasy will either harm your mental health, or it's a sign you already have a mental health struggle.
Yeah, I mean, I think even if you maybe believe the lie that you're not valuable,
yeah,
you know, and you hate yourself, then you're more likely then to, you know, suffer from an eating disorder or self-harm.
Or self-destructive behaviours in general.
Drink too much or whatever.
Alcohol. If you value yourself, anything you value, like I don't throw, we've just got a new iPad, I'm not going to throw that to you because I value it. I'm not going to treat it carelessly because I value it. And so when you recognise the truth, this is valuable, it costs hundreds of quid, like you will treat it valuably. Whereas if you believe the lie about it, if you were told, oh no, that iPad is literally worthless. It's a fake one. It's worth 20 quid and it'll probably break within a week. I wouldn't get a case for it. I might throw it around. And that's why, exactly as you said there, Jo, it's such a great insight. Those who don't recognise that you are made in the image of God, that is a true reality over your life. That's why you're valuable, because God loves you. He made you. Even if you weren't conceived in love, the God of the Bible did conceive you in love. Even if you don't know your parents, the God of the Bible knows you and has a plan for your life. When you know that as reality, you will live and treat your body well. When you don't know that as a reality, or you have self-doubt or doubt about who you are or who you're meant to be or what you're created for, if there even is a purpose, then you will struggle to do that, and inevitably your mental health will take a battering because of that. Light bulb.
Yeah, so maybe after all of that you're kind of thinking, whoa, okay, this is a bit overwhelming. I mean, we've got you know, this devil who's like the father of lies, who's bombarding us with all these lies. We've got our own flesh that's lying to us, our own hearts are lying to us.
And
society is lying to us. So, I mean, gosh, I mean, where's the hope in that, really, you know? Yeah. John?
Well, I've got really good news. And all of this is just setting the tension, really, and setting up the good news that is Jesus. You see, where Adam fails and is deceived and doesn't pass the test of being faithful to God, we see Jesus succeed. We see a very similar story, in fact, to Eden. When Jesus is baptized, he comes up out of the water, and there's this bit where the Holy Spirit descends on him like a dove, and you hear this voice from heaven. And Jesus hears this voice of God saying, "This is my Son who I love, with him I am well pleased." And he then goes straight from that into the desert. And he fasts
on his own,
and he fasts for 40 days, and whilst this is happening, the devil appears to him multiple times. And every single time, like he did with Adam and Eve, Jesus is isolated in this moment. And
he's physically weak because he's physically fasting, weak and hungry, he's not eating.
And the devil lies to him again and again and again. Says to him, like, if you were the Son of God, then change these rocks into bread because you're hungry and you need to eat. Straight away, if you're the Son of God. So straight away casting doubt. And what does Jesus do in this situation? Does he go, flip, you're right, I am hungry and I am the Son of God, so I can do whatever I want. Bang, there we go. Lovely bit of Hovis. No, he says, he quotes scripture back to the devil. He says, but it's written, man does not live on bread alone. And this happens again and again. It happens another couple of times. And each time Jesus quotes scripture back to the devil, where Adam failed, Jesus succeeds. And in fact, the whole of the Hebrew scripture, which is the Old Testament, by the way, the whole of the Old Testament is leading up. It makes us, shows us these interesting and sometimes exciting but fallen characters. We have Adam, who's like, well, he's walked with God in the garden. He's been given the authority to name the animals and the world and everything, but then he eats the fruit and he sins. We see King David, who's this amazing king who
slays a giant,
and the Bible describes him as a man after God's own heart, and then he sleeps with Bathsheba and has her husband murdered. We see Moses, who's this great guy who again sees God and experiences God, has the moment with the burning bush where he's so close to the presence of God and receives the Ten Commandments, but we already know he's killed an Egyptian, and then he believes his own hype and never gets to enter the Promised Land. Throughout the Hebrew scriptures, we see...
But these heroes of faith.
Heroes of faith who just fall short and fail, who show such promise and then fall short. And with the whole of the Old Testament is leading up to, we need a second Adam. We need a second Moses. We need a second David. We need someone who's going to stand the test of time and who's going to defeat the devil, who's going to be a true king, who's going to fulfill the law.
Who's not going to fall for a lie.
Who's not going to fall for a lie. We get this in the person of Jesus. That's why the Bible may seem confusing, but when you see it as one big narrative arc, it's compelling and it's exciting and it's incredible. Mm. And when we see this in the person of Jesus, it's absolutely transformative for us. So I believe with all my heart that Jesus is the ultimate reality. When we talk about spirit and truth, when we talk about presence and meaning, when we talk about relationship and reality, every other relationship you have is flawed or will hurt you or harm you or at some point will break your heart. And things. There's been moments in every relationship I've been in with friends, with family, with Jade, moments where you just feel broken and upset. They're repairable because God is a gracious God, and with the right communication and the right love, and nothing is beyond hope, but they still let you down at times. The relationship I have with Jesus, he has never let me down. He has never broken a promise. My relationship with him is pure, and that's based because he's with me. The Bible says that the Spirit of God and the presence of God lives within you if you're a Christian. So if you want that, by the way, if you want that as a reality in your life, if you're a Christian, it already is, whether you feel it or not, that's true. The presence of God no longer dwells in the temple, but it dwells within you. And secondly, if you're not a Christian and you want that, that is available to you. You just have to ask. And feel free to DM us on Instagram if you want to know more about that. But secondly, so we have that relationship. He's with us in his presence. But secondly, he is truth. He doesn't just have truth. Jesus is truth personified. Where the devil personifies lies and is the father of lies, Jesus, the God of the Bible, is the father of truth. If you want to live your life without a declining mental health, if you want to live your life based in reality, what we believe is central, because what you believe can ruin your life. What you believe can make or break you, because out of what you believe is how you live. If I believe it's good to do something, I'll do that thing. If I believe it's bad to do something, I won't do that thing. And so it's so important to live your life in relationship with God and in a way that's congruent with the reality of God. We hope that makes sense, and we hope this episode's been a real blessing. We've loved this episode in prepping for it and thinking about it and planning for it. And so I guess, Jade, all that's left really now is worship of the week on the back of that.
Do I still have to do a jingle?
No, you don't. And we really want to recommend our next episode after this is we're really privileged to be interviewing the fantastic Ellie Limebear to discuss just everything worship. What is worship? And what's the importance of sung worship? And a whole manner of questions on that. So it feels really fitting, and because we love her music as well, to recommend to you Ellie Limebear, Maker of the Moon. I love this song. It's just so powerful, speaks so much truth about who God is. and why we should live our lives for him. We hope you've enjoyed this episode, and we look forward to bringing Ellie Linebear to you guys in the next one. God bless. We love you guys.
Yeah, see you guys.
See you later.
What did I say?
Thank you for listening to my mummy and daddy.
Thank you to listen to my mummy and daddy. See you soon. Welcome to Bring the Light.